Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving straight into, well, the pretty crucial world of security testing for 4G and 5G networks.
It's definitely critical.
Yeah, I mean, these networks are incredibly powerful, right? But they're getting more complex, built on virtualized systems, software-defined stuff.
And that complexity, while powerful, it opens the door to new challenges. New potential weaknesses.
So more places for things to go wrong, potentially.
Exactly. Think of it like a really intricate machine. More parts, especially software ones, mean more potential points of failure or, you know, vulnerabilities.
Okay.
So today we want to explore some really insightful research that focuses precisely on that. We're looking at vulnerabilities found through security testing, especially using a technique called fuzzing.
Fuzzing. Okay, yeah. Let's unpack this a bit.
Yeah.
So we're talking about how experts are like stress testing these networks, trying to find their breaking points.
That's a good way to put it. And they're using all sorts of methods. Some require basically zero inside knowledge.
Right.
While others have, you know, full access to the system's guts.
And the goal here is really to understand these weaknesses now so we can build more secure networks for the future. Is that the idea?
Precisely. Because if we know where the cracks are, we can fix them. And what's fascinating is just the sheer variety of methods being used and the kinds of security gaps they're uncovering.
Where should we start then?
Well, let's kick things off with a really interesting paper called Systematic Meets Unintended.
Okay.
It introduces a pretty novel systematic approach to fuzzing, specifically designed to find vulnerabilities in 5G.
Systematic.
Uh-huh.
So like a very targeted way of probing for weaknesses. What did they actually do?
They came up with three distinct fuzzing strategies. Each one operates under different assumptions about what an attacker might know or have access to.
All right. What's the first one?
The first is listen and learn, or LAL. This is what we call black box fuzzing.
Black box, meaning you're attacking it from the outside with no blueprints.
Exactly. Imagine trying to crack a safe without knowing anything about its mechanism. You just try stuff. LAL works like that. No prior knowledge of the actual 5G communication protocols.
Okay, but how do you find flaws if you don't even know what the normal communication should look like?
Ah, well, it's quite ingenious, really. The LAL strategy basically eavesdrops on normal chatter between a phone and a base station. It records legitimate messages.
Okay, so it learns what's normal first.
Right. And then it starts messing with things. It swaps out commands within the same communication channel.
So like recording a phone call and then just randomly replacing some technical instruction being sent in the background?
Kind of, yeah. To see if that causes the connection to glitch or, you know, break down unexpectedly. And actually, because of how temporary IDs work, things like the RNTI, the radio network temporary identifier, most of these swapped messages end up being invalid anyway.
And just doing that, this random swapping, they found actual security holes.
They really did. Using an open source 5G platform called Cyreson, LAL, uncovered 129 vulnerabilities related to the RRC connection. That's the radio resource control.
129. Wow. Was it hard to find them?
That's the striking part. No, the average detection time was just 0.072 seconds, like incredibly fast.
0.072 seconds. That's almost instant.
It really shows that even without deep protocol knowledge, some fundamental flaws in how connections are handled can be, well, surprisingly easy to trigger.
Okay, so that's the completely blind approach.
Yeah.
LAL, what was the next strategy?
The second one is synchronize and learn, or SIOL. Still black box, but a bit more sophisticated.
How so?
It leverages user information that an attacker might realistically be able to get hold of, and it uses probability-based fuzzing. The researchers found SIOL was actually more effective than LAL.
Better precision.
Better precision, better recall, and it managed this with fewer fuzzing attempts overall.
Hmm. How does having some user info make such a difference?
Well, SIOL essentially replays recorded commands like LAL does, but it also has access to synchronization information. Lets it make more, let's say, educated guesses about which manipulated messages are more likely to be accepted by the system or which ones might cause some kind of unexpected behavior. It's just a more targeted black box approach.
Got it. A slightly more informed blind attack. Makes sense.
Yeah.
What about the third one?
The final strategy is source and learn, or SOL. Now, this one is white box.
White box. So full access. They can see the code.
Exactly. Full access to the system's inner workings, the source code. So AL focuses on really pinpointing and understanding vulnerabilities by deliberately fuzzing or manipulating the most critical bits of data within the communication.
And what did that uncover?
Using this, they found three man-in-the-middle vulnerabilities, MITM attacks.
Oof. Man-in-the-middle is always bad news. someone listening in may be changing things.
Right. And what's significant here is that these vulnerabilities stemmed from inherent weaknesses in the design of the 5G protocols themselves.
Not just a coding mistake, but the actual blueprint. That yeah. sounds serious.
It is. It suggests potential fundamental issues, you know, deep down in how 5G communication is structured. Now, what's really interesting across all these findings is the researchers focus on what they call legal and invalid states in the RRC protocol.
Legal and invalid? That can it be both? That sounds contradictory.
Yeah, it does a bit. Think of it like a situation where the system doesn't throw a standard error flag. It doesn't say connection failed in the usual way. Yeah. But it's also a state where communication can't actually proceed correctly.
So it's stuck in limbo somehow.
Kind of. It's an ambiguous middle ground where things go wrong quietly without triggering the normal alarms. And it's precisely in these gray areas that unexpected vulnerabilities can hide. In fact, those 129 RRC vulnerabilities from LAL,
yeah.
they turned out to be implementation errors leading to these legal but invalid states.
Ah, so the standard error checking wouldn't necessarily catch these.
Exactly, which is why fuzzing, which probes these less obvious paths, is so vital. The paper also points out that command-level fuzzing, which is what LAL mostly does, is relatively low-cost compared to bit-level fuzzing.
Low-cost meaning? Easier to set up.
Yeah.
Needs less information.
Precisely. It needs less detailed info about the system's internals. And crucially, it doesn't require the really precise timing and frequency synchronization that bit-level fuzzing often demands.
Okay.
So it's a more accessible first step, you could say, for finding a broad range of potential weaknesses.
Makes sense. Start broad, find the low-hanging fruit. Now, didn't the researchers also identify specific RRC states that seemed more problematic?
Yes, they did. By analyzing the connections that failed during their tests, they pinpointed 7 RRC states that showed up much more often in failed connections compared to successful ones.
Like red flags, then? Warning signs?
You could think of them that way, yeah.
Yeah.
Indicators of potential instability or vulnerability within the protocol's state machine.
So could you just build a detector based on those states? Like, if state X appears, sound the alarm.
Well, they looked at that, but it turns out it's not quite that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking for those individual high-risk states wasn't enough to catch all the RRC connection failures.
Huh. Okay, so what did they do?
They took it a step further. Instead of just looking at isolated states, they started analyzing the transitions between states. The sequence of events during a connection attempt.
Ah, so not just individual words, but the flow of the conversation, so to speak.
Exactly. By mapping out the probabilities of moving from state A to state B, then to state C, and so on, they could build a much more accurate picture of risk.
And did that work better?
Significantly better. They identified 7 specific sequences of state transitions, transaction patterns, that almost exclusively occurred in connections that failed.
Okay, that sounds much more reliable.
It was. This transaction-based approach proved much more trustworthy. Over 70.54%, to be precise, of the failed connections they observed included at least one of these high-risk transaction patterns. That gives a much stronger signal that something's going wrong.
That's a huge improvement. And I heard they also use machine learning to try and predict these failures even earlier.
They did, yeah. To boost reliability even further and maybe get an early warning, they developed an LSTM-based prediction model.
LSTM, long short-term memory. That's a type of AI, right? Good with sequences.
That's the one. It's a neural network particularly good at analyzing sequences over time, like the steps in establishing a connection.
And how well did this predictive model perform?
Remarkably well, actually. It achieved around 90% accuracy, or 90% AUC, area under curve, technically in predicting failures based on just the first 10 steps of the connection.
10 steps. How long does that take?
On average, just 0.072 seconds. That's the same time it took LAL to detect issues on average.
Wow.
And if they let the model observe for slightly longer, just 0.08 seconds, the accuracy jumped to 96% AUC.
Okay, so it's fast and accurate. What does that mean in practical terms?
It means you get an early warning.
Mm-hmm.
On average, this prediction gives about 3.49 seconds of lead time before the connection fully fails. Time to potentially take defensive action.
Almost 3.5 seconds. It's a decent window in network time.
Yeah.
Did the model have any, like, weird quirks or false positives?
They did notice one interesting pattern. Sometimes the model would incorrectly flag a connection as failing when the 5G base station, the GNB, sent 3 paging messages very early on, like in those first 10 states.
Huh. Why would that trigger a false alarm?
Well, it turned out that many genuinely failed connections also showed that same pattern. So it suggests that maybe the way the system handles multiple early paging messages could be a subtle weak point, or at least a pattern that's tricky to distinguish between normal operation and an impending failure without more context.
Interesting. So that first paper, Systematic Meets Unintended, clearly found a lot regarding RRC vulnerabilities. What other areas are researchers probing?
Another really critical and maybe less talked about area is the security of the baseband itself.
The baseband, that's the chip in your phone handling the actual radio signals, right?
Exactly. It's fundamental. It handles all the low-level radio communication. And there's a framework called BaseSafe, stands for Baseband Sanitized Fuzzing Through Emulation.
BaseSafe. Okay.
Which offers a pretty novel way to find bugs in these components, components that are often overlooked and usually proprietary closed source.
Why is baseband security such a big deal? Why target that specifically?
Because the baseband parses and processes a massive amount of data before your phone is even fully authenticated on the network.
Ah, so it's exposed early on.
Right, which makes it a prime target. If there's a vulnerability there, an attacker could potentially listen in, or worse, maybe even escalate privileges to gain control over the phone's main operating system, all without needing your credentials.
That sounds really dangerous. But you said they're closed source. How do you test something you can't see inside?
That's the challenge, and why research has been a bit limited. BaseSafe tries to get around this using emulation.
Emulation, like running the baseband software in a virtual machine.
Essentially, yes. It creates a virtual environment where researchers can run the baseband firmware, the software blob, off the device on a regular computer and then fuzz it automatically.
Okay.
Its main parts are an API to hook this emulation up with a powerful fuzzer called AFL++ Saver and also a special memory allocator tool that's really good at detecting heap-based buffer overflows.
Buffer overflows.
Yeah.
Those are classic security bugs, right? Where data spills over where it shouldn't.
Exactly. A very common source of vulnerabilities.
Now, emulating a whole baseband, doesn't that sound incredibly slow? Fuzzing needs speed.
You'd think so, but they've done a lot of work on optimization. BaseSafe uses a CPU emulator called the Unicorn Engine. They managed to get it running hundreds of test executions per second per core. In their setup, they were hitting around 15,000 executions per second total.
15,000 a second, that's really fast for emulation.
It is, and that speed is crucial for effective fuzzing, for exploring enough inputs to find those tricky bugs.
And did they find anything with the BaseSafe?
Right.
Any real-world bugs?
They did. They set up a proof-of-concept harness and successfully found memory corruption bugs, including those dangerous heap-out-of-bounds writes, in the cellular baseband firmware from MediaTek.
MediaTek.
Yeah.
They make chips for a lot of phones.
A huge number. So, yeah, finding vulnerabilities there is potentially quite impactful.
So how does that process actually work? Taking the firmware and fuzzing it with BaseSafe.
It involves extracting specific functions from the baseband firmware that handle incoming messages and then running just those functions within the Unicorn emulator. BaseSafe provides helper functions like Alfork server start and a Plumas start, which make it easier to connect this setup to AFL++ style.
Okay.
And these include clever tricks like caching the machine code that Unicorn generates during emulation. That drastically speeds things up when you're running similar test cases over and over, which is exactly what fuzzing does.
Right, avoiding redundant work. What kind of messages were they targeting in the baseband?
Their main focus was on LTE RRC messages, similar to the 5G ones we discussed, and also EMM messages, that's EPS mobility management.
Why those specifically?
Because these are exchanged early in the connection process, before the device is fully authenticated. Vulnerabilities and how the baseband handles these messages are prime candidates for pre-authentication attacks.
The most dangerous kind, arguably.
Often, yes. And BaseSafe also has a debug mode. If it finds a crash, it can give you detailed information to help figure out exactly what went wrong and how to fix the bug.
Okay, that's fascinating stuff on basebands. Let's maybe zoom out a bit. We've talked about specific tools, but what about the general challenge of fuzzing network protocols that have states where the past matters?
Right, stateful protocols. That's a key challenge. These are systems where the response depends not just on the last message received, but on the whole history of the conversation. Like logging into a website username, then password.
You can just send the password first.
Exactly. Fuzzing these involves feeding them unexpected inputs, random data, malformed messages, and then watching very carefully. Does it crash? Does it throw weird errors? Leak memory? Behave abnormally?
And this basic idea of fuzzing, just throwing unexpected stuff at software, It's pretty fundamental in security testing, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's incredibly practical and effective. Tools like AFL, Libfuzzer, Bufuzz, they're used everywhere. Fuzzing has found literally thousands upon thousands of bugs in critical software. Think Google Chrome, Windows. It's made a huge difference to security.
So how does a fuzzer like AFL figure out which random inputs are actually useful for finding bugs, especially in these stateful systems? Is it just guess?
Not entirely randomly. AFL uses something called coverage guidance. It instruments the program being tested to see which lines of code or which branches get executed by each input.
It tracks where the input goes in the code.
Precisely. If a new input, maybe a slightly mutated version of a previous one, causes the program to execute a code path it hasn't hit before, AFL thinks, ooh, that's interesting. It saves that input and uses it as a base for future mutations. It helps systematically explore the program's logic and states.
Trying to cover all the ground, basically. But sometimes, surely you need inputs that aren't completely random to get the system into a specific state. Like, it needs to be somewhat valid.
You're right. Purely random data often gets rejected very early. That's where grammar-based fuzzing comes in.
Grammar-based?
Yeah. Tools like PeachFuzzer, they don't just throw random bytes. They use a definition, a grammar, often written in something like XML, that describes the structure of the expected input.
Like, this message should have a header, then a length field, then the payload.
Exactly. The fuzzer understands that structure, so it can make more intelligent mutations, maybe change the length field but keep the header intact, or fuzz just the payload. This generates inputs that are more likely to be partially valid and get deeper into the protocol processing, exercising more complex states.
Okay, that makes sense for finding bugs caused by weird inputs. What about finding flaws in the actual logic of the protocol implementation? Like, it follows the rules, but reaches a bad state.
Right, logical vulnerabilities. That's where another technique, model-based testing, can be really powerful.
Model-based testing.
Yeah, this focuses on checking if the program's actual behavior matches a high-level, abstract model of how the protocol should work. It's been used really successfully against things like TLS, the security protocol for the web and Wi-Fi protocols.
How does that work in practice? You build a model first.
Yes. You start by creating a formal model of the protocol. This defines the types of messages, the expected sequences, the replies you should get, and the overall expected outcome, like should this sequence result in a successful connection or a failure.
Okay, you define the correct behavior.
Exactly. Then you define test generation rules. These automatically create lots of test cases. Some are normal, valid sequences. But others intentionally deviate. Maybe they drop a message, inject an unexpected one, repeat something, or modify a specific field in a message.
Trying to trip up the logic.
Precisely. You run these tests against the actual system and compare its behavior to what the model predicted. If there is a mismatch, you've likely found a logical flaw or vulnerability.
That sounds quite different from just fuzzing inputs. More about checking the overall conversation flow against expectations.
It is. It complements fuzzing well. Now, let's zoom in on another specific area, NB-IoT. That's the narrowband Internet of Things standard, right, for low-power devices.
Yeah, things like smart meters, sensors.
Exactly. Are there specialized fuzzers for those networks, too?
Yes. There's a tool called HFuzz. It's described as a gray box fuzzer, specifically for NB-IoT core network protocols, particularly one called GTPv2.
Gray box. So not fully white box like SOAL, but more informed than pure black box like LAL.
That's the idea. It doesn't have the full source code, but it does use information about the protocol's format and structure to guide the fuzzing. It makes it more effective than just random guessing. What's particularly tricky about testing these NB-IoT protocols?
One big challenge is their structure. They heavily use things called information elements, or IEs, and the message frames can be really complex, often with deeply nested hierarchical structures, like more than two levels of components inside components.
Okay, so lots of nested boxes inside boxes. A simple fuzzer might get lost.
It could struggle to generate inputs that are valid enough to navigate that structure. HFuzz is designed to handle this.
How does it manage that complexity?
It has a pretty neat architecture. Mm-hmm. A key part is the message structure tree, or MST. It uses this to represent that hierarchical structure of the messages.
Like a map of the message's layout.
Exactly. It builds this MST using format information about the protocol contained in a set of rules. These rules allow it to translate the raw binary data into this tree structure, and then after mutating parts of the tree, translate it back into binary to send. It also has the usual fuzzer components, a mutator, a monitor, a sender, and a scheduler.
Does it use feedback like AFL coverage guidance?
Yes. HFuzz uses basic block coverage feedback, just like AFL, to see which parts of the code are being executed, but it also has an enhanced algorithm.
Enhanced how?
It tries to prioritize what it calls meaningful basic blocks. The idea is to focus the fuzzing effort on code paths that are more likely to indicate new or interesting behavior, rather than just hitting the same common paths over and over. This helps accelerate the discovery process.
So prioritizing the potentially more fruitful areas of the code, how did HFuzz stack up against other fuzzers?
They evaluated it against AFL and Peach on both an open source platform, OAI's SPGW, and a commercial one, Bee's SGW. The results showed HFuzz achieved significantly higher basic block coverage than both AFL and Peach.
Higher coverage, so exploring more code.
Yes, and its enhanced algorithm reached that maximum coverage much faster. A key reason seems to be its ability to generate more valid inputs because it understands the protocol structure.
Ah, so its messages get past the initial checks more often.
Exactly, which allows it to penetrate deeper into the code where more critical bugs might be hiding. It really shows the benefit of a fuzzer understanding the language it's speaking.
Definitely highlights that tailoring the tool helps. Is there one more example we can look at?
Yeah, one more quick one, Daiko. This tool focuses specifically on fuzzing the state machines for NAS and RRC and LTE.
Dancing on XStratum.
Yeah.
RRC again. These are core control parts, right? Managing signaling.
Crucial control plane components, yes. Finite state machines, or FSMs, that manage how the device connects and communicates signaling messages.
So how does Daiko fuzz these FSMs?
It's quite clever. It basically takes SRS LTE, which is an open source LTE software suite.
Okay.
And it replaces the standard NAS and RRC state machine implementations with its own modified stack, one designed specifically for fuzzing. This gives researchers much finer control over the internal states and message handling during testing.
So they swap out a core component with a test version. What kind of bugs did Daiko find?
By doing things like replaying specific NAS messages, for instance, messages used for GTI reallocation, which changes temporary IDs at just the right or wrong moment in the sequence, or even just replaying them unexpectedly after a certain command, they found vulnerabilities. It also found cases where the system would incorrectly accept authentication or identity requests sent in plain text after a secure connection, a security context, was supposed to be active.
Wow. Accepting unencrypted security stuff after encryption is supposed to be on. That sounds pretty bad.
It's a significant flaw, yeah. Sending sensitive identity or authentication info in the clear when it should be protected, it really underscores the value of these targeted fuzzing approaches for finding subtle but critical issues.
Absolutely. It seems like all of these different approaches we've discussed, you know, the black box LAL, the white box SOAL, the baseband emulation with BaseSace, grammarware fuzzing, model checking, specialized tools like HFuzz and Daiko, they're all needed.
They really are. They form a kind of essential toolkit for tackling the wide spectrum of potential vulnerabilities in these complex 4G and 5G networks.
So let's try and bring this together. We've seen security testing and fuzzing uncovering a whole range of issues, things like RRC connection failures, those man-in-the-middle risks at the protocol level.
Right, stemming from the design itself sometimes.
And then down to really serious memory corruption bugs deep inside the baseband firmware on our devices.
Yeah, potentially allowing deep system compromise.
It seems pretty clear that securing these incredibly complex systems isn't a simple task. It needs a multi-pronged attack, so to speak.
That's definitely a key takeaway. There's no single silver bullet here. No one testing technique finds everything. The most effective approach usually involves combining methods.
Tailoring it to the situation.
Exactly. Tailoring it to what part of the network you're testing, what resources you have, what knowledge you have access to. Black box fuzzing might give you a good initial sweep.
Find the easy stuff.
Find the more common issues, yeah. But then you need those more specialized techniques, white box, emulation, protocol-aware fuzzing to dig deeper and find the really subtle, perhaps more critical vulnerabilities.
And looking ahead, as 5G keeps rolling out, gets more complex, and we start thinking about 6G, and these networks become even more woven into, well, everything.
Yeah.
Critical infrastructure, our daily communications.
Everything relies on them more and more.
This ongoing effort to rigorously test and secure them just becomes even more vital, right?
Absolutely essential. Which kind of leads us to a final thought, maybe a question for you, our listener. Given this increasing reliance, this deep integration of mobile networks into almost every aspect of modern life, what are the broader implications of the kinds of vulnerabilities we've discussed today? And what does this continuous effort to secure these ever more complex systems really mean for all of us?
Something to definitely think about. We certainly encourage you to check out the research papers and the tools we've mentioned if you want to dive even deeper.
There's a lot more detail there for sure.